Well, hello. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. Welcome back to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast. How you guys doing?
Oh, God.
Now that really brings me back. Yeah.
Tech issues.
Yeah.
Of course there's a tech issue. Oh, beautiful. Just gorgeous. I wish I was in your garage. Flummoxing around my laptop. All right. Oh, beautiful. Welcome, everybody. It's the Comedy Film Nerds 2026 Academy Award predictions show, or whatever, Oscar chat, whatever we want to call it.
Sure. Yeah. ballot talk. Yeah.
You know. Ballot talk, indeed.
You know, as every award show races towards irrelevancy, you know, some of them are trying to get there faster than others.
You know, it was interesting. We were just talking before we started recording, like you get access to the Writers Guild app, and I'm in the Producers Guild, and I get the Producers Guild, and I was a member of SAG. I was just randomly selected for the SAG selection committee, which goes across episodic and you know, not just films, but it's such an interesting thing to where we're at as an industry in terms of it's been a rough 3 years, and you know, some people are like, it's over, the industry's done. Some people are like, there's this guy on TikTok that is following the industry very closely, and he thinks there's going to be this golden age of production that's all about branded content, because he's tracking how every tech company is now becoming a media company as well.
Correct.
So it's,
and that's also where a lot of the funding is coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the interesting, cause that's the biggest issue right now. All of our friends and everybody that works in entertainment is like, no one's writing checks. The traditional sources of studios and streamers who were usually the ones funding projects are not doing it. But now it's coming from, like, brands are just becoming media companies.
Yeah, and what the media companies want to do is just acquire or license. They don't want to produce anymore. Like, we don't want to do this anymore. Like, oh, the thing that you were set up to do, you don't want to do that anymore? Okay.
Yeah. It's like Ford saying, we don't want to make cars anymore.
Yeah,
we just want to.
No. Or trucks. That's the, we're yeah, done.
And we just want to put our logo on stuff.
But if you make a truck and bring it to us, we'll put our name on it. Yeah.
Of course.
So it's interesting. The whole business is shrinking, consolidating, merging. And the truth is, no one knows what things are going to look like in the next couple of years. But the thing that is bad is that the indie people are getting kind of squeezed out. And that's where usually the new voices and the more interesting things are happening. Is as more media becomes homogenized, you're going to get the same thing over and over again. And that includes like branded content, because branded content is going to have a specific goal in mind when they make content. It will have the brand.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it's going to look like. But at the same time, you know, there's also startup tech companies, and there's also indie people who are making things on their own. And there's like a lot of different kind of directions things are going in. So it's very scary on one side. It's also kind of interesting in another, where you don't know what's going to happen and no one kind of does. And, you know, I run a content company, and as we're slowly kind of expanding, I'm like, you know, we were creating a more of a community with comic book and independent film people. And we're all in contact and figuring out how we can get things done and how we can get things made. I mean, you've had these conversations, literally the same ones, but in Asia, you know, to make a TV show and do all of these things outside of the system, the traditional studio system that is not really traditional anymore. That's disappearing. But I think too, like, it's not all doom and gloom. If I could put a ray of hope in there, because I think there's a lot of interesting things going on in the indie space. It's just smaller. That's what worries me the most, is because people are coming up there, our net generations after us, they're not making indie films. They're going on TikTok and they're making viral videos, and, you know, they're making different content than things that might, you know, last or be on TV, or it's just like a vertical really quick and it's gone. It's more ephemeral. So I'm not sure. It's what, the bottom line is, I don't know what's going to happen. So.
Yeah, those are great points. I think too, you know, the 90s was sort of the last, was the golden era, the last golden era of the independent movie being where the studios would be like, you know what, we're going to spend $5-10 million on this weird, quirky script. And we're going to take a shot on this filmmaker that we saw, he or she directed a short film at a festival. And we're like, let's mm-hmm. go for something. And
or buy up films at festivals too. Like
right, acquire exactly.
small films. And every big studio had an indie arm.
Yes, they did. They had an indie arm and they would go to the festivals. And, you know, people would get their movies funded in whatever ways, independent financiers outside of Hollywood, but they'd make something really cool. And that was where that's the festival circuit really blew up in the 90s. That's when you had Sundance, Slam Dance, and all those other, you and I were up there in the 2000s with Slam, you were in Slam Dance, I was in No Dance.
Yeah. Park City was the mecca where you saw Sundance is the big one. But at the same time, there's all these satellite festivals that people, and they weren't empty. They were full. No, they were just as full. So there was an appetite for everything up there.
And like you say, there was buyers went up there and treated it like a marketplace as well. It was.
Yes.
And so what's happening now, the thing I say, and we've had so many of these discussions at the Producers Guild, and I'm not all doom and gloom either, because Hollywood, has always, at the end of the day, it's been a technology. And I remember Alan Havey would come on our show, and when we were at the cutting ground floor of podcasting, and everyone was like, what's a podcast? Havey, remember, he came on our show and he said, Warner's is making talkies. And his point was the silent film industry went, Warner's is making talkies. And so it's always been like that. Silent films, are they going to get rid of theater? Well, we still have, movies is going to crush theater. Theater is not the predominant form of storytelling, but there's still theater companies in every major city. And the movie, TV is going to kill movies, and video, VHS is going to kill, we've always had this, it's going to kill it, it's going to kill it. No, it's just going to change it and what it looks like, because people always want stories. They always want to watch stories and content. And what's happening with AI, boy, we don't know. In 6 months, in 18 months, it could be completely different. I mean, the AI stocks, look, I'm not deliberately trying to put politics in here, but this is relevant. Iran bombed AI servers in their retaliation, and that tanked AI stocks. And now everyone's like, what's going to happen with that?
There's a financial model that you just hit on as well. It's like AI, everyone invest. But what's the return over these companies and stuff? Are they making the money? And, with these licensing and stuff, it's hugely expensive to have AI and server farms and to cool them and all of these things. We're not at the point now where it's vastly profitable. So you might even see a consolidation of AI. You might see a bubble. You might see a collapse and a rebuild. Nobody knows what that looks like either, but your point is that it's also very vulnerable right now as well.
It's very vulnerable. And like you say, 30 years ago, a young person came up and they went to film school and they shot an independent film. Now they're making something interesting on TikTok. And there is a lot of interesting content that's being done on short form content, and verticals is the big fancy is the thing. Now we want scripted vertical content. But there's this,
and all of the kids are at risk too. I was going to say, that's the other thing too. We're up in negotiations again. It's WGA, SAG, and the directors, even the producers. You're looking at stuff how much is this going to replace? How much do they want it to replace? And how much can we fight it and create and keep original content and humans making scripts and movies and all of those things? Or is everything going to be AI? So then, the old joke was the studios are like, we'd have a great studio if we could just get rid of all the writers, directors, and actors. And 30, 40 years later, like, hey, come over here. We've got something for you. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do well. Yeah. And the other side of that coin is we could all make great movies if it wasn't just for the studio executives getting in the way.
Right, exactly.
I think there might be a little backlash to the AI thing. and then we'll get into the Oscars in a second. But like,
yes,
there's
yes.
a woman who's a neurologist that I study, and this is the thing that, and she went on TikTok and really talking about, and she's been studying how she thinks in a year or two that there could be social media could be irrelevant, because you're already starting to see bots and all that. I see it in my comments. I post a stand-up video and I'll see friends or fans commenting on it. And then I'll see some like generic, wow, really had me there, or what a twist at the end. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like that has nothing to do with
09438572. Yeah.
Yeah. And you go to their profile and they got three followers and they streeted their account a year ago. And this woman, she's like, the main thing with social media is you got an actual human interaction. That's the appeal of it. You post something, somebody responds, and
it's the first word.
It's the first word. And also, social.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, it's a main way that young people communicate. And if they're all going, oh, this is all just robots, she goes, there's starting to be, I mean, look, I live in Asia. You travel anywhere around the world. Most people are just sitting there on their phones, Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But there could slowly be enough of a percentage of people just like, I reject this. I want to have real human connection. And social media is all AIs. And if AI can takes it over, then it's just robots talking to robots.
Trying to sell you stuff.
Then people are going to check out of it. And well, it is great. Like you say.
Yeah. I hope that happens. Yeah.
Let's hope. So yeah, it's an interesting time. It could go, I'm not gloom and doom. I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, look, everyone on this planet's going to die. We might all die on the same day, but you know, it's like, whatever.
Keep on keeping on while you're here.
But it should bear what we should talk about. I was just in Japan and I got to see, Sanae, Sandy, big fan Japan, and Andrea. I wasn't able to see Andy, great. but it was great to see them. I hadn't been there in 10 years and it was so cool. And we were talking about when we were there shooting earbuds and all that. It was really cool.
It's super nostalgic. Like when we were there, I was actually there with the family like 2 years ago, and we didn't just meet them. They actually came with us on our entire tour. They came to like all the different Tokyo places, went to museums, we went to Hakone, and it was really great because we thought, oh, they're going to be busy and stuff. I'm like, no, we want to hang out. So we were there for a couple of days, and then it was really, really fun. But like you said, Graham, it's like, you know, it was like no time had passed. We just connected again right away. It's like we just picked up a conversation. It was a day, not 10 years. It was just, it was great. And you know, we'll always be thankful we had that experience going to Japan and shooting the movie. And I always remember that time where we were shooting, I think it was Kamakura, the great big Buddha statue. And we turn around, somebody goes, hi, Chris. Hi, Graham. And like, we turn around, we got recognized in Japan. Like, we didn't get recognized in L.A. You know, in Japan, and it was an expat. It was a teacher. It was like he came to the LA Podcast Festival, and he was like, oh yeah, this guy, I can't believe I ran into you guys. I'm like, all right. So we interviewed him. I remember that. It was awesome.
I know. It's so wild. It's such a cool moment in history. And it was said like during Earbuds, like, you know, Will Anderson and a couple comics were like, when we interviewed him again in 2014, they were like, well, I don't know. Either podcasting is going to get taken over by big corporations, and if it's so, this is a you know, and that it was a very special moment in history that we were a part of with Earbuds in the festival. Mm-hmm. And now everybody knows what a podcast is. Everyone listens to some podcast or a YouTube show, about something, whatever they're into, they're listening or watching to something. Mm-hmm. And so it's, we were right.
Yeah. Well, I will say this before we get into the Academy Awards. One thing that I was able to fix the feed on Apple, and all 617 episodes of Comedy Film Letters are now back up on the Apple Podcast feed. They were in Spotify, but you know, I had to go back and forth. Apple blamed, Libsyn blamed Apple. No one could like figure it. I'm like, really? Come on, guys. And it was the Libsyn guys figured it out. They were like really awesome about it. And they're like, nah, okay, they read the response from Apple and they're like, all right, we got it. And then they fixed it. They refreshed the feed. Apple told me, well, you have to delete and re-upload all 600 episodes.
Shut I said, up.
I don't think that's going to happen. Even if I wanted to do that, I don't think I would do that. And Libsyn's like, nah, I just reset the feed. We're good. And so within 24 hours, they were all up again. So thank you, Libsyn. Shout out there. You guys fixed everything. So
not surprising that Libsyn fixed it and Apple was like the dummies.
Yeah, I'm like, all right. There was even a little shade in the email, which was great. And because the one line that I sent that from Apple and the one the Libsyn tech was like, oh, they're actually right about that for once.
Felt like an old beef. Felt like an old
beef. It really did. I'm like, all right, I don't want to get in the middle of this, guys, but I'm glad you fixed it. So.
Well, but, you know, we did the Batman episode a couple of years ago. We did the Robert Redford when he passed away. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe more than once a year. Maybe we do. I don't know, two or three episodes a year because it is fun to get and talk about this and talk movies.
Doesn't matter where in the globe you are. So yeah, we could figure it out. So.
Yes. Doesn't matter.
But, well, let's get to it, Graham. Mm-hmm. I think we got a lot to talk about. And are we going to do just picks or are we going to do should and will as well?
Wow.
I know that that's kind of going back.
That's deep. I mean, maybe we'll see how it goes. I don't want to find out more than I can chew, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to put you on the spot. You don't, if you only want to do one, that's fine. You know, there's... All 617 episodes are back up. There's no pressure now, Graham. It's okay. Oh,
thank you. Thank you so much, Chris.
So now let's start with a big one. Best sound. No. So we're going to go in. We're going to go in reverse order on the ballot. And it's interesting. This one is F1, Frankenstein, One Battle After Another, Sinners, and I think Surratt. But what's interesting about this is normally there's like a Jurassic Park or Transformers movies in here, and there's neither. They're all good films, but I would definitely go with F1, Should and Will, because it's cars racing past, and I know that's a lot of sound editing.
I totally agree, dude. And F1, man, this is when. Yes, I want Hollywood to make more independent movies and spend it. We've talked about this. We used to talk about this all the time. You know, I wish Hollywood would get back into the $20 to $50 million indie movie, or even the $20 million indie. Get more into these cool that are good dramas. Find the good scripts. There's good, great writers out there. That being said, keep making shit like F1. Like, it was a blast. Yeah. I had so much fun in the theater. I mean, this was like. I saw the trailer and I'm like, Brad Pitt, race cars, Javier Bardem, the eccentric billionaire. I'm in. I mean, the storyline, fine. The old guy coming back, the young kid, and oh, guess what? Brad Pitt falls in love with somebody or whatever. Of course. Who cares? There's a big race at the end. I don't care, Chris. It was a blast. It was so much fun. and again, this is the thing, like we talked about at the top of the show, what Hollywood is so good at is using the latest technology. The car racing scenes were amazing. They were amazing. They were so fun. Watch this in the big theater. But then to the specific of this category, yes, the sound, when I was in the theater, they did such a good job of putting the audience in the race car.
Yes.
Visually and from the sound standpoint. And again, we've talked about this on the show a lot, how important the sound mix is and sound design is.
Right.
And, you know, you could overdo like bah, 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 race, cool race music that would kind of, I feel like I'm watching a racing film rather than I'm in the F1 car. And that's what this movie did really well from a sound standpoint. They put you in, I felt like I'm in the car And I felt, and I heard all of the sounds of what a driver would hear in that thing. And that's why I give this to F1. No doubt. Should, could, will win across the board.
Yeah, I think so too. It was definitely one that really felt like, yeah, this is really deserving. So, you know, production design is interesting because you've got Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, and Sinners, and they are all period pieces. Now, but they're all period pieces, but Frankenstein also is kind of like a reimagined period of like what was going on and everything from the lab that he built. And these were practical sets too. That's what was really impressive. Like there wasn't as much green screen as I was actually expecting in this movie. They were practical and built. So I'm going to go with Frankenstein for best production design.
Yeah, that's interesting because it was a complete reimagining of telling this story that's been told for 100 years, right? And which did make it interesting. And we've talked about this in the past. Like we always kind of, I know a lot of work goes into CG and green screen and stuff. I'm not like downplaying that level of work, but the practical design of practical sets do matter in terms of this award category.
Absolutely.
I was leaning towards Sinners just because Sinners was pretty interesting and what it was trying to capture visually and obviously thematically. But yeah, I think I would have to agree. I would have to, I'm leaning towards Sinners, you know, and I don't want to just always like, it's like, you know, we'd always say the sound design would always go to the loudest movie when, you know, just right. Whatever one has the, you know, costume design always goes to the period piece with the big gowns or whatever. So I don't want to just fall into that trap, but I would agree. It's Frankenstein for me.
Absolutely. But we're about to fall into that trap in the next one. hairstyling. You've got Frankenstein, Kuho, if I'm saying that right, Sinners, The Smashing Machine, and The Ugly Stepsister. Now, did you see The Smashing Machine with The Rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie. But, you know, okay, they made him look really weird. And, you know, that's one of those times where you're like, you know, you could take a few liberties with the story. It doesn't have to be exact like they were, you know, the spoiler. They were setting it up for him to, like, fight his friend at the end and, like, it never happened and, like, all of these things. I'm like, you know, it's okay. We expect a little Hollywood embellishment. I feel like that was, like, we're going to be really true to this guy's story. I'm like, yeah, you don't have to be. Then, you know, you make a documentary. So I didn't love it.
I'm glad The Rock is, you know, or Dwayne Johnson is trying to branch out from just being The Rock in all of his movies and good for him. And this was a real fighter story. And these guys, these early UFC guys, man, they didn't even have the big contracts that the new guys, they were just like bar brawlers barely getting by, you know,
the money wasn't there.
Yeah, there was no money. There was no big billionaire investment. It was just people didn't view it as real fighting. And now it's this multi-billion dollar industry. And there's multiple, there's the UFC, there's Bellator, there's other,
right.
You know,
there's competitors.
XFL or PFL, Professional Fight League. There's all these, and there's a lot of very good fighters and there's very good analysis now. And there wasn't back then. So I thought it was cool that The Rock was trying to tackle this type of story, but getting into makeup, I would give it to this movie over Frankenstein because to make a guy's face look like he's been pounded his whole life. Cause I've met a lot of professional fighters, all their noses are like, you know, and their cheeks are kind of puffy because that was their job of just getting knocked in the face.
Yeah.
And you know, it's why yes, Frankenstein does big prosthetics and they're making literally two people look like monsters. And I give that a yes, that's cool. But this is where I deviate from the, you know, the creature people always win this, the aliens or the demon people always win this category.
Right.
But I think the subtlety of making the rock.
One way or another, Graham, the demon people always win. So
if you look at who runs the world, Chris, yes, yeah. You're absolutely correct. But like, I think it's actually, it shows more skill and craftsmanship to take a guy like The Rock, who is a very good looking man, and make him look like a guy with a weathered face from fighting. And it doesn't look fake. It doesn't look like, oh, The Rock's got a bunch of prosthetics on. It looks legitimate. To me, that's a bigger skill set. Because just putting a wacky face on any, you know, a big monster face, while it takes a lot of work, they could make either one of us look that. I think it's the subtlety of changing Rock's face to this fighter's face takes more skill and is more deserving of an award than what they did for Frankenstein. And not taking anything away from the Frankenstein, it's amazing what they did makeup wise, but I would give it to The Rock. I would give it to Smashing Machine.
All right, then we will split fighter face versus monster face. Okay. Fair enough. So we will do, so you're going with Smashing Machine. I'm going to go with Frankenstein. And so next is best original score. Now this one honestly is kind of a tough one because I can't say that the score really, you know, stuck out on any of these films. Now, to be fair, score and song are two different categories. So you got to remember, like, score does not mean like the big songs from these movies as well. So you've got Sinners, One Battle After Another, Hamnet, Frankenstein, and Begonia. And if I had to pick, I would probably go with Sinners, but honestly, I'm not really super strong on any of them, like, because they were all really good scores. I can't really feel that one outshone the others.
Yeah, I have a similar response. When I first looked at this list, I was like, huh? Nothing stood out to me. Like makeup, the last category, I immediately was like, I had very distinct opinions on this. I had distinct opinions when I was watching these movies. But this, I would probably have to go with One Fight After Another, in the sense that.
Okay.
And overall, we'll get into it. But overall, I think One Fight After Another as a story didn't measure up in a lot of ways. But.
Agreed.
You know. Sean Penn, really good actor. This movie was just like, I'm doing a character. Like, it was just like, I'm going to comb my hair. It was just like.
He was a little literally ridiculous. A cartoon character in that movie.
Yeah. He walked around as a cartoon character. And it's just like, but the theme of the movie, One Fight After Another, and the score did motivate the action. The score did make me go, oh, okay, what's the next, where they're on the run, what's going to happen next? There's a lot of like, they're on the run, who's doing what with whom, where's this guy going? Even when the story was kind of like, ugh, really, this movie's too long. The score, I would have to give it One Fight After Another for this category.
All right. So One Fight After Another, One Battle After Another for Graham, Sinners for me. And then let's best casting. And this is a new category. You know, this is one that we haven't really seen before. Although best stunt performance should have been before best casting.
Yeah, come on, man.
Seriously.
No casting director putting their life on the line.
Yeah. Again, race to irrelevancy. You know, yeah. We'll be on YouTube in a couple of years, the Academy Awards. So
there's nobody watching.
Yeah, you know, we gave Inora all these awards and last year that that were not deserved, to the point where everyone was so mad that the Academy had to come out with the rule from now on that everyone has to watch all the Best Picture movies. You know, there's a problem with your organization when you have to tell people to watch the movies, which is the only reason your organization exists. Best casting, we have Hamnet. Nina Gold, Marty Supreme, Jennifer Venditti, One Battle After Another, Cassandra Koulikoudis, The Secret Agent, Gabriel Dominguez, and Sinners, Francine Meisler. So now this is an interesting one. You know, Sinners, the casting, you know, you have one actor playing two roles as brothers. Does that help the casting or does that take away from the casting? Because that's one less role you had to do. So as a casting director because it has nothing to do with the actual performance. You put that person in that spot. So I really don't know if that's like a good thing or a bad thing. Secret Agent had a lot of really interesting characters in it. One battle after another, like you said, there was a lot of cartoon characters in that movie. Marty Supreme was, I think, fairly traditionally cast, and Hamnet, you actually had a smaller cast, but everyone did a good job there as well. So I didn't really feel like one jumped out over the other. I'm going to go with Sinners on this one just because I think there's something for, you know, one actor playing both roles, but I'm not sure. Like, I could be convinced otherwise, Graham. So.
Well, this category is already flawed. Yes. Because Hollywood movie, the star, the casting directors have nothing to do, very little to do, I should say, with the big name actors. That's contracts. That's business. That's, that, you know, that's like
it, saying it's, best it, agent.
Yeah, exactly. Like that has. So if we're going to do that, where the casting directors have a lot of influence is the secondary role.
Let me back up a little bit because I would actually be interested in a category if they added a best coked up packaging agent. I would actually want to see that in the next awards show.
Well, if they want to boost their ratings, that's absolutely the categories you got to start adding. You know what I mean? It's so like, oh, best creep who doesn't want to admit he was at a P. Diddy party or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of categories. Yes. So for me, it's like if we're going to do the casting, then it's the secondary role. So then I have to go to The Secret Agent, which is a really good movie and takes place in Brazil in the 70s during a coup. It's a very historical thing. And you're casting a lot of lesser known people. So now this is where the casting director actually has some skill in influencing the picture of we got to get the best because you're doing a movie like that. That's you've got the lead actor and that's basically, but this is not going to be a big mainstream movie because it's about Brazil and it's, there's a lot of subtitles. And so then this is where the skill of a casting director comes in where the business end of it really isn't that influenced as much as it's really more, let's get the best people for this role. Cause this is an, you know, this was an era that actually happened. This was when a dictatorship took over Brazil in 1977. So we're doing period piece. We're doing a specific time in a specific place in Brazil. And you have to get good Brazilian actors and people that can speak Portuguese and be believable. So that to me is where this skill, this category, again, stunt performer should be way before this category.
Right.
But if we are going to have to play with.
Yeah. I remember for Secret Agent, like also, where are we going to find 100 overweight men not wearing shirts? During
Carnival. Yeah. And this is a very carnival. Exactly. And this is also a casting director that was Brazilian. So they needed to know the talent pool in Brazil.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's where casting director skill comes in. As a director says, we need someone to play this part. And the cast director goes, oh, wait a minute. I read this person on this other role. They'd be great for this. That's where a casting director's skill comes in.
Yes. Oh, I completely agree. So what would be your pick in this flawed category? I'm still going to go with Sinners, but what would you?
Secret Agent.
Secret Agent? Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Fair enough. Like I said, I can totally see any of the, I can see a an argument for any of these really. And I don't mean that they're all strong. I mean that they're all weak. It's a weak argument for any of those. Best costume design. I think we're getting back to what you said before. Now we have Sinners, Marty Supreme, Hamnet, Frankenstein, and Avatar, Fire and Ash, which was made in the computer. So I'm not really sure how this qualifies for costume design. I get there is some overlap with like designing, you know, costume designers can then they digitize. And I know that does happen. However, maybe we still celebrate actual costumes in this category.
I think I feel like, yes, I'm Avatar is completely disqualified for me. I don't even recognize it in this category. I'm sorry. Like that's not a costume.
No,
you know, I think I'm going to go. I mean, Marty Supreme.
Also, you know, period piece again.
Period piece. Honestly, though, I'm going to go Sinners. Okay. And I'm going to, this is the one time I'm going to say should and will, because, because I think Sinners is going to, I think it's going to clean up. I think it's going to walk away with a bunch of Oscars. And I think this will be one of the down ballot Oscars that it wins.
I'm going to disagree. I think Sinners is going to win a lot of the up ballot ones and maybe lose mm-hmm. some of these down ballot ones. So I think Frankenstein's going to take this one as well. I think Frankenstein's going to take of these lower ballot ones and get completely shut out in the upper ballot ones. So, and I think they're going to switch Frankenstein Sinners, then Sinners Frankenstein. I think it's
that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm switching mine now. I'm going to Frankenstein.
So the next one, best original song. This one, I honestly think, is a complete no-brainer. And if you have kids, you would agree, because Dear Me, in Relentless, Golden, K-Pop Demon Hunters, Diane Warren, Relentless, I Lied to You, Sinners, Sweet Dreams of Joy, Viva Verdi, and Train Dreams, Train Dreams. It's Golden because every kid on the planet has seen this movie and sings these songs. And I remember my daughter was like, she was doing a summer camp program for kids, and every single kid would like come up, want her to sing the songs, and they would dance. And finally she's like, what is this movie? So we came back and we watched it on Netflix, and you know what? It's actually really good. K-pop Demon Hunters. And so I think this is going to be a no brainer. I think that's going to be win for best song for sure.
I mean, I'm currently living in Asia, and K-pop is so massive here. It's like you have no idea, like, how popular it is here. And the reason it's popular is many of the reasons you listed, which is just catchy songs where people sing along, right. and it's marketed very well, and it's packaged very well. And so, yeah, I will defer to the children at your daughter's summer camp
of the world. Yeah.
Of the world.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, Golden. Now the next one is best editing. This is F1, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, Sentimental Value, and Sinners. Well, let me give the names too. F1 is Stephen Mirione, Marty Supreme, Ronald Bronstein, and Josh Safdie. One Battle After Another, Andy Jurgensen, Sentimental Value, Oliver Bouge Coute, I doubt I'm saying that right, and Sinners, Michael P. Shaver. So I really think, like, when you have a frenetic action movie, like whether it's a war movie, whether it's cars driving around, it's the same thing with the sound editing. The actual editing, too, is very complicated, and it's... a lot of it can be more subtle than you think it is, the way the sequences are put together and create like that adrenaline. So I really feel like F1 deserves this award as well out of all of them.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, One Battle After Another has good editing, even, and I was noticing it even when I was getting annoyed with the story and some of the characters. Yeah. Sinners has got good editing because you're cutting between, you know, Michael B. Jordan's two people, you know, the two characters he's playing. And there's a lot of good tension building as the, you know, vampires start coming to life or whatever. Yes. So that's, but I agree. It really, the F1, this is where editing at an action movie, because if you misstep at all, you take the crowd out of it. You get
exactly,
them.
Yeah.
And this movie, I was so in it. I mean, really, like...
You lose the adrenaline. You lose that rush. Yeah.
You lose the rush. You're now aware that you're watching a car racing movie rather than thinking you're in a car race, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think F1 absolutely should win this.
All right. On the same page on F1, for sure.
Let's do it.
Now, best cinematography. For me, this was also a no-brainer. This is Frankenstein, Dan Lawston, Marty Supreme, Darius Kanji, One Battle After Another, Michael Bauman, Sinners, Autumn Durald, Arkapow, and Train Dreams, Adolfo Villoso. First of all, only foreigners win this award. So let's get that out of it. Except for Roger Deakins. He's the... No. but here's the thing about these movies. They're all really beautiful to watch, and they all have good cinematography. However, Train Dreams brought it to another level where the actual cinematography was a character in the film. It was haunting and poetic, and it washed over you to the point where the cinematography was almost like a living presence on the screen as you're watching this film, which is an elevation that these were all good films, all good cinematography, but I thought Train Dreams brought it to the next level. Like, Graham, do you remember when we were talking about that movie, The Revenant, with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah.
And I remember us talking about, like, it didn't look like they had sets. It looks like they got a time machine and sent the camera back, and that's what everyone looked like, and that's what these forests and stuff look like.
I remember specifically, like, and a fan repeated it. I said it sounded like they got a time machine and strapped GoPros to some old trapper and let him run around.
And that's really what this movie felt like, too. Like, you never felt that, like, this was a setup, or this was like no one was yelling cut, or you forgot that this was a movie. You really felt like, you know, the camera brought you into this time and into this world, and where, you know, a guy was just, you know, to survive, he had to leave his family and cut down trees and then get back on a train, then do it again. And all of these things right at the time when America was basically just being built, you know, and everything. So for me, Train Dreams was a no-brainer for cinematography.
This is where I'll do a should and a will. I think should will is Train Dreams for all the reasons you said, because it's really beautiful. But I think this is where the Academy will just lean into Ryan Coogler and a female cinematographer and Michael B. Jordan and give it to Sinners. Not that Sinners isn't good for cinematography, but Train Dreams should win. But I think Sinners will win.
Fair enough. Yeah, that is entirely possible. So best animated feature, I think we can just build on the best original song. I think K-pop Demon Hunters too, because also everyone's looking for an excuse not to vote for a Disney movie, because they usually sweep these categories. And if something new and a different studio can kind of like come along and do something different, I think people are excited to see that. Now, out of these movies, Arco, Elio, K-pop Demon Hunters, Little Amelie, or The Character of Rain, that's one title, and Zootopia 2, I've seen Elio, very mediocre, not Disney's best. Zootopia 2 was actually really good and really fun and did a lot of interesting things, and the animation was beautiful. However, K-pop Demon Hunters just, again, brought everything to a different level, something we haven't seen before. It was fun, it was poppy, it was light, it was bright, and it had that appeal to, like, literally every single age group. So I think K-pop Demon Hunters is going to win this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be, it's because of the title, because of how popular K-pop is. This might be the one thing where the Academy's like, there might be some people that are kind of awake in terms of what's happening in the world.
Right.
A lot of the Academy is living, they're like we've talked about this. It can be just like this exclusive country club that is completely woefully out of touch with how the rest of the country is thinking and how the rest of the world is thinking. But this feels like somebody went, hey, I hear this K-pop thing's popular. maybe we should do something about it. Yeah. And I think this is where that's why this movie will win this category.
I think so too. All right, best documentary feature. Now, I'll admit I haven't seen any of these films because, as you know, any Academy Award nominated documentary, you have to be in the right mood to watch, and you have to make sure, like, you don't mind feeling very bleak afterwards. So I haven't watched any of these, but if I had to go with just by title alone, I like Mr. Nobody Against Putin because I kind of enjoyed the title. But have you seen any of these, Graham?
Read off the list.
The Alabama Solution, Come See Me in the Good Light, Cutting Through Rocks, Mr. Nobody Against Putin, and The Perfect Neighbor.
The Alabama Solution I saw.
The Perfect Neighbor. Is that's got to be like a serial killer movie or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is where It's hard for me to not talk about politics within this category because they the Academy makes a very, this is where they really push their politics is in this category.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a really good documentary made by my friend Abby Martin called Gaza Fights for Freedom. That's never going to make it in this category. And Mr. Putin versus Mr. Nobody is just, again, I don't think Putin is some great guy, but.
Is that the spy that was murdered? Is that what this movie, I mean, that's what I assumed it was about.
I think so. Yeah, this is why it's hard. Again, there's like, this really feels like, this is where the Academy, well, yeah, this is where the Academy is pushing its, and I hate saying this term because it sounds, I'm an independent. I'm a very left-leaning independent, just to give people a where I'm coming from. But this is where it's like, this sort of out of touch Hollywood liberal that views the rest of America as the flyover states. And then just, this is the kind of thing that is getting people tuning out. And I know people that are smart, educated people that have wildly varying political views. I've interviewed all these independents and they don't fit into a box of the Hollywood liberal or the Texas MAGA, you know, like, and they, and 45% of Americans now call themselves independents, and Hollywood is still stuck in this old thing. And I just, this category.
What was the Alabama solution about? Like, at least we'll get the summary on one of them. So
I believe it's about their prison system. I saw.
Okay.
Yeah. When it first came out, like, again, I'll look this up. The Alabama solution was about the prison, and not that that's a bad thing. Or
these are also movies too. It's like the animated movies. The documentary features are often very difficult to find. Like, you know, if you're lucky, you can, you know, catch one or two of them before the awards. A lot of them aren't even, you know, out yet or in any kind of streaming. It's hard to see all of these.
I remember this. This movie came out early last year, so it's been a while. Okay, yes. So this is about the prison system, and this is about like, and this I'm like, great. Let's call out the flaws of the American prison system, specifically in the state of Alabama, and how it's unjust. That I'm down. I'm like, great. But then let's call out all of the injustices from everybody. Let's just not. The selectiveness of, so this is the only movie in this category that I've seen.
Okay. Do you think it was Academy Award worthy? So, because we're shooting in the dark on this category.
We really are. Yeah. I mean, it's a good documentary. I mean, what we've always talked about on this show, what makes a good documentary is it should show it. Usually a good documentary reveals some,
right. Shines light on something.
A subculture you weren't aware of, or some injustice that you weren't aware of.
Good point, Graham. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be some horrific injustice. It could be some really interesting, like a subculture or a biography of someone that you weren't, like Metallica is some kind of monster.
Yeah.
Fantastic documentary. So, like, but that's the thing about this category, too. Like, there's all different flavors of documentary. But like you said, there's a specific agenda for the getting these specific ones nominated, and there's never a diversity of subject in like okay, maybe like one that's a subculture, one that's a biography, one that's a really hard hitting issue. Like you never get like that kind of mix in this category, which is a shame because I think there's a lot of documentaries that could use a little more exposure, and this could be a place to do it. But we've never seen that in this category.
No, and if the Academy and Hollywood truly wants to engage its audience, it needs to go back to being like independent thinking. And independent means I have to be willing to listen to a point of view I don't necessarily agree with. Because if we're going to do the, like, you know, okay, the the religious right, they just preach to the choir and they think they're better than everyone else. Well, you know, Hollywood liberals can do the same thing. So like, if we're truly going to do that, then let's have, I mean, how come there isn't a documentary about the labor struggles in this country or like housing or something that's like really affecting people? Like how come
they were made, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And exactly. So why were just these ones nominated? And so it's like, we could do a documentary on the $1 billion boondoggle and high-speed rail in California. Like,
yes. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, we could do a documentary on this category, I think.
Yeah, we could do a documentary. I mean, I remember one of the first years we were doing the show, that documentary, An Inside Job, came out, which was so good. It really showed the corruption of the 2008 housing crisis. And it didn't pull any punches. It didn't.
Right.
It blamed both parties. It blamed Bush. It blamed Obama. It didn't pull any punches. And I was like, okay, that give me more of that, you know? And again, like you say, there's probably a bunch of great documentaries about all these different kinds of subjects that are out there, but they didn't get nominated.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're going to go with Alabama Solution and Mr. Nobody against Putin, but I wouldn't count on either of those if you're for your poll, your ballot. Next one is best international feature. You have Secret Agent, The Secret Agent. It Was Just an Accident. Sentimental Value. Surat and the Voice of Hind Rajab. I got to say, I haven't seen all of these, but I found Sentimental Value to be absolutely fantastic. Mm. I really loved this film. And it's what we were talking about before. It's like such a great, independent, small story, character-driven, fantastic performances, great direction, great interaction, great dialogue, great writing. Like, it was firing on all cylinders, but it was a movie for adults, and it was just really enjoyable. It was heartfelt, it was moving, and you know, I liked Secret Agent too. I thought it was a little long, but but I think my pick would probably be Sentimental Value, because it was really, I found it really moving all the way through. And it was also had like this kind of cool Hollywood theme about it, how a director couldn't really relate to his daughter, so he wrote a script to try to connect with her, and kind of like the ways things kind of like resolved. And I thought it was really well done.
You know, you bring up two great points. The Secret Agent and Sentimental Value are two movies. These are the types of independent films Hollywood should go back to also making. These shouldn't just have to be done. They're two really good movies. They're adult stories. They're riveting and engaging for different reasons in different ways. But Sentimental Value is just it's a beautiful story. I mean, The Secret Agent, I really liked it. And I speak a little Portuguese and I know a little bit about Brazilian history, so I liked it. Mm-hmm. And that lead actor, I'm blanking on his name, Mora, he's so good. When he came on the scene playing in the cartel series, Pablo Escobar, he came on the scene playing Pablo Escobar. Like, he's such a good actor, man. And Sentimental Value, well, either one of these are deserving of winning. So it's a toss up for me, but Sentimental Value, it hits close to home. The theme of, you know, my first ever time going to Afghanistan in 2004, this is before smartphones and everything. And my family was freaking out that I was over there. And the first 3 days we got in country, we were running around and I didn't have a chance. You know, I didn't have an iPhone that I could just text everybody and send videos. So yeah. It was like the first 3 days, and we got to Kandahar after going to all these crazy bases and all this stuff. And I wrote this email to my dad, and I CC'd a lot of my friends and family about my experience. And as I was writing this email, I was in tears replaying what had just happened the last couple of days in this one fire base where we was under the camo netting. It's in Afghanistan, but how nobody smiled. It was my first time where I had a chance to sit down and just process what had happened to me. And I put it into an email. And my dad was still teaching acting at the time at Southern Connecticut State University. And he read the letter to his class and he told them, like, this is how being how performing can have a positive impact. You know, he's like, my son is entertaining the military in a war zone. And then there was like a scene night at the end of the semester. So I went in August of 04, and then like December of 04, he had like a scene night, and one of his students
do it.
No, he cast one of his students to play me and
oh my gosh,
read it like a monologue. Oh, now cool. I found out about this after the fact, Chris.
Oh,
and I was
inviting you to see it.
No, you would have thought he knew the playwright, pretty close to the playwright, and he didn't. And, you know, I didn't have the greatest relationship with my father in certain ways. He was good in some ways, but he was a very high functioning alcoholic. And so I was so, and he didn't tell me about it until, and he told me after, and he's like, well, we had this great scene. I go, why didn't you invite me? He's like, I don't know. And he's like, and I was sharing about this with a close friend a couple months ago. I was going through like a tough thing with something else. And I was I thought of this and I was so mad at my dad. I thought of this thing and I was like, wow, he didn't even, and my dad was kind of jealous and competitive with me in a very weird way with certain things. Like when the Comedy Film Nerd book came out, he was jealous of that because he never got published. And
interesting.
Yeah. And so my friend goes, who is also a theater person, goes, Graham, but your dad gave you the highest compliment without, you would have liked it if he would have invited you and got to see this kid perform it and talk to his students. All your dad knew how to do was sort of take credit for your work without inviting you there. He goes, but he gave you the highest compliment in the only way he knew how. So my point in this story is that's kind of what this girl goes through is.
Yes.
He can't tell her, honey, I love you. You're great. But he can do a movie about it.
You know, right. Like, he can literally write a script about it. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. But he, so, and it is
as crazy as that sounds, it felt so real and not contrived at all. And that's what also made it amazing. Like that story you just told, it makes perfect sense that this, it's real.
Yep. Somebody like that who is some big artist with a giant ego can't even express love to their own child. It's totally weird. That's why that movie, I was like, wow. I watched the trailer and went, I don't think I can watch this whole film because I've already lived through it. So I don't need to do this. But it's why it did resonate because why this is deserving of an award for best foreign film is because the writer clearly had some personal something about
this
went through
come
this
out of nowhere. Yeah.
No. This isn't just like, hey, I got a wacky idea for aliens invading the planet. No. So, I'll probably give this a sentimental.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right. So we're agreement on that one. The best original screenplay. Now I want to mention this a little, because I'm going to read them first. It's Blue Moon, It Was Just an Accident, Marty Supreme, Sentimental Value, and Sinners. Now it's not always every year that, the best international feature films show up in other categories. They're for many, many years, they were basically segregated. Like no matter how well written or directed a foreign film was, it's like, nope, you're foreign film, not an English language film. That's your category, you know, stay in your lane. And now we're seeing every once in a while, these movies that might be for best foreign films are also showing up in these other categories. And I think that's interesting. And for Sentimental Value, now I think I'm going to do a should will on this one as well. I think Sentimental Value should win for best original screenplay, but I think Sinners is going to win. This is where I think Sinners is going to start to sweep.
I totally agree, dude. I think Sentimental Value, again, screenplay, what we just discussed, the writer obviously was coming from some sort of personal thing, and not that Sinners isn't a good script, but this is where the Academy goes, hey, foreign movie, you should be lucky we just gave you a non-foreign nomination.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So enjoy the party and go home.
So, okay, we're on best adapted screenplay. We've got Begonia, by Will Tracy, Frankenstein, Guillermo del Toro, Hamnet by Chloe Zhao and Maggie O'Farrell, One Battle After Another by Paul Thomas Anderson, Train Dreams by Clint Bentley and Greg Queter. And now these are also, keep in mind, these are adapted screenplays. So these are either based on books or they could also be sometimes magazine articles. I think in this case, it looks like this is all books, I believe, with the exception of maybe Hamnet. I don't know if that was a book or not. I don't remember.
Hamnet is a book. It was adapted from a book. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So best adapted screenplay. I'm really not sure on this one. Like the thing about adaptations is that like when you take the source material, then you do something truly, truly interesting and unique with it, but also staying true to the original source material. So I'm trying to think like which one of these did that. I mean, I know Frankenstein did, but at the same time, we're so familiar with that story. I don't see this one winning that category. One Battle After Another, I think it was a weird adaptation. It got too Paul Thomas Anderson-y, I think, for that adaptation. Train Dreams was a pretty great adaptation, but I didn't read the book, so I couldn't really say like how, if it strayed from it or not. Hamnet and then Begonia. So I don't know. This one I'm a little, I think I might go another should will. I think Train Dreams should win, but I think Frankenstein will, just because it's probably the most commercial and more recognized film, but I'm not sure on this one.
I'm going to go with should will. I think Begonia should win. it should win. It's a crazy story and was really well done. There's all good actors in it being insane. Jesse Plemons is so good at playing crazy and different levels of crazy. He's so good at playing crazy. It's amazing. I mean, just go back and watch Civil War. That one scene he has in the movie Civil War is
chilling.
And then his like, aw shucks.
Yeah.
Serial killer from Breaking Bad or whatever. Right. Like, oh my God. Like, it's horrifying. The kid from Friday Night Lights is just a meth murderer. Like, so I think Begonia or however it's pronounced is Begoa, right?
Yeah. Begonia.
Begonia. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that should win, but I'm torn between either Frankenstein or Hamnet. And the reason I go Hamnet is because a lot of times in this category, a best-selling book that a lot of people are aware of, and Hamnet was a best-selling book. Mm-hmm. I think it will win because they're going to get there. This is where they're going to give a little, love to this book.
Okay.
That's my pick. That's my should will.
Fair enough. Best supporting actress. We have Ellie Fanning in Sentimental Value. Ingo Ibb's daughter, Lily. I forget it. I'll just Sentimental Value. The other girl in Sentimental Value. Amy Madigan, Weapons. Wumi Masoku, Sinners. Tiana Taylor, One Battle After Another. Now, this is an interesting category. Honestly, every single one of these performances was strong, like super strong, like and memorable too. Like you remember every single one of these performances. So it's a little bit of a tough one. I'm wondering if this is where they might like you said, like they're looking to give a little love to a different movie, like to Weapons, like maybe Amy Madigan will win this one just because they want to give something to Weapons. But I mean, Ellie Fanning was so good in Sentimental Value. I mean, they all were. I'm going to try this girl's name again too. Inga Ibb's daughter, Lily S. Sentimental Value. Oh. Yeah. And she was, the sister, and she was just really good too. And, so I don't know. I mean, these are all really good. And these are supporting performances too. And they're all solid. Like every once in a while in a supporting performance, you could kind of pick one off and go like, well, you know, won't be this one, but not this time. These are all like super solid. I'm going to go with should and will. Ellie Fanning should win. I think Amy Madigan is going to win because I think they want to give something to Weapons.
It's interesting because I think Teyonah Taylor did such an amazing job that and really kind of a breakout performance. That's where the supporting, if it's a breakout performance, like we haven't really seen this person before, or they've only done little teeny bits and all of a sudden this is like, I mean, Ellie Fanning is really good in Sentimental Value, but I think Teyonah Taylor
convinced me, Graham. I think I might need to change mine to Teyonah Taylor. I'll still keep it as should. I still think Amy Madigan's going to win.
Oh, really? Ah, interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
I'll give Teyonah Taylor the should and the will. I'll give her a both. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to change my my ballot. Okay, best supporting actor. Benicio del Toro won Battle After Another. Now, this is also where we can pick a few off. They're like, yeah, no. Jacob Elordi, Frankenstein, Delroy Lindo, Sinners, Sean Penn, won Battle After Another, and Stellan Skarsgård, Sentimental Value, which is interesting. Like, the thing about Sentimental Value, it really felt like an ensemble. So I think, like, it's really, like, pick and choose, like who's supporting who. I mean, anybody could really be, it's a mix and match for that type of
film. Well, this is also, we've talked about this in the past. This is also a strategy that's used because going for best actor is really hard. It's easier to get a supporting actor nomination and win.
Yes.
Because Skarsgård could be best lead actor. I mean, you could put him up in that category for that film. I think, Sean Penn, no way. I would either go
Toro. He's like, that was another cartoon character. But I think it's going to be Jacob Elordi for Frankenstein. I think he's going to win it.
Benicio del Toro, look, I like him in anything he does. And it was like, and one of the reasons I went to watch One Battle After Another was like for him. And even when Sean Penn was kind of cartooning his way out of the movie for me, I was like, well, Benicio, just let's get to another scene with him at his karate studio or whatever.
Like where's he going to fit into this story? I'm like, well,
him back.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. This is like, oh, another.
I want to see him again, but he kind of doesn't.
I know.
So which is a reason. The monster.
I think I'm going to go Skarsgård. I think I'm going to go Skarsgård.
Yeah, that's a solid
I don't think Delroy Lindo was in it enough. He's a really good actor, but I don't think he was in it enough. It's too small.
I agree. Now, here's an interesting thing as we were talking about it. Like, we have Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor. Could Michael B. Jordan be nominated for both of those because he played both twins? I mean, an argument could be made that he was supporting himself in that movie.
I would love to see that.
And that he wins both. Like, that would be really funny. So we're going up to Best Actor now. Timothy Chalamet, Marty Supreme, Leonardo DiCaprio, One Battle After Another, Ethan Hawke, Blue Moon, Michael B. Jordan, Sinners, and Wagner Mara, the Secret Agent. Now, I really think Timothy Chalamet is going to get this. And Marty Supreme was not the best movie. It was good. It was a good film. But it was really, he was literally in every scene. He carried that film as this grifter sociopath who finally, like, you know, found his heart at, you know, towards the end. He had like a great journey, but it was really his performance that anchored that entire film. So I think he's going to win because there's no way it's going to win Best Picture. I think they're going to give this one to him.
I mean, Timothée Chalamet is a really good, strong young actor. This is one of the problems Hollywood is having is because of the whole social media TikTok world, there isn't this new, and because they don't have, they're not doing the independent films. Usually Hollywood would have a whole new young crop of young 20 something actors. And they don't really have, they have Chalamet, they have Zendaya.
Right.
You know, a couple other kids, but they don't have the big talent pool that they used to have. I was talking to a film producer about this. He goes, Graham, name one young actor that everybody knows. I'm like, Chalamet and Zendaya. And he's like, that's it. Right. You know, even the guy that played Bruce Springsteen, Bruce Springsteen, which he did a great job.
He's still known as the guy from The Bear.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just proved it. I'm like the guy from the Bruce Springsteen movie. I don't even know his name. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so like, this is an issue that Hollywood is having is there isn't a whole new, and it used to be the young crop all came out of TV. And then they transitioned from TV to feature film. George Clooney was a TV actor, you know,
that was the cast. Movement. You know, you cut your teeth on TV and then you graduated to film.
Well, now
that's gone. Yeah.
It's gone. There's just content, and there's people with millions of followers that you've never heard of, and they're making, you know, a couple hundred grand a month on whatever platform, and they don't really care. They don't really need to like go to the, they don't, none of this matters to them. And no, so
no. Mr. Beast isn't going to win an award, and he doesn't care.
Doesn't care. Yeah. Mr. Beast does not give a shit. These guys on Twitch that are making millions of dollars don't care.
Jeremy Allen White, by the way, is that
Jeremy Allen White. Okay.
But yeah, absolutely. It's a different thing. It really is. And then the other thing too, is like all these clickbait articles is like Timothy Chalamet said something about like opera or ballet. And I'm like, oh really? A young person said something stupid. Is that news now? I mean, I'm like, come on, enough. But that, you know, then that drives a useless news cycle for like a week or two, but a whole nother ball of wax.
This is why I think Chalamet will win, because they're going to try to push the young people. Not that he doesn't deserve it. I mean, he carries that film. Yes. Who do I think should win? It's probably your same pick, the same guy from Frankenstein.
Well, he's not on this one.
Wait, no.
Yeah,
I was thinking of supporting.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio, Ethan Hawke, Michael B. Jordan, and the guy from Secret Agent, Wagner Mora. Mora Wagner? Oh, they put his name reversed.
It's Wagner Mora, yeah? Wagner Mora.
Wagner Mora.
Right, I'll put Wagner Mora should win, and Timothy Chalamet will win.
Okay. Definitely a case could be made. Best actress, Jesse Buckley, Hamnet, Rose Byrne, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, Kate Hudson, Song Sung Blue, Renate Resvi, Sentimental Value, Emma Stone, Begonia. Okay, now I will say one thing about this category. Also a good category, a lot of good performances here. Kate Hudson surprised me. I'm not a huge fan of hers, and I really didn't think she had like a huge range. But this movie, she did an amazing job with Song Sung Blue. It was nuanced and layered, and she got into the role. And by the way, it's a crazy story. I don't know if you saw that movie, but it was it sent me scurrying to Google a couple of times, like, well, that couldn't have happened. And like, oh my God, it happened. Well, that couldn't have happened again. Like, oh my God, it happened again. like the stuff that you think is Hollywoodized was actually happened in that story. So I'll give her a lot of credit. I don't know if she's going to win. I really think this is going to be Jesse Buckley's award in Hamnet, but I think they're all strong performances, and I think maybe anybody could win. I don't know.
I agree. I think it's really great. I think it's very strong performances from everybody. And again, Kate Hudson, I think the fact that she was good in this shows kind of how Hollywood, you know, did the rom-com pigeonhole. It's what they did to Matthew McConaughey, and he had to really stand firm.
Right.
And he told a story. They kept offering him some rom-com that was like 5, then 7, then 10, then 14. He kept having to walk away from it.
He had to attack a dragon in a helicopter.
Yes. Which is something we all should do, Chris, at one point in our lives. Attack a dragon in a helicopter. Like, I'm doing that later today. But yeah, I think this is like Kate Hudson got pigeonholed by Hollywood, and this is a great opportunity for her to come in. And it is, we've talked about it so many times. These make the greatest movies is the actual crazy. You don't have to put Hollywood crazy stuff in there when there's a really good crazy thing that happened. And you know, look, Wolverine, he's good at anything he wants to do. You know what I mean? I'll let him. But these are all strong performances. Boy, I don't even know. I think they're going to, I think you're right. I think this is where Hamnet gets another nod. I think Hamnet.
Yeah. So I think Jesse Buckley will win this one.
So I'm going to say Jesse Buckley will win. But I'm going to say Kate Hudson should win. I'll do a should will on this category.
Fair enough. Yeah, I like it. And that's always a treat, too, when like a film and a performance can surprise you. That's like, yeah. this is great. Best director, Paul Thomas Anderson, One Battle After Another, Ryan Coogler, Sinners, Josh Safdie, Marty Supreme, Joachim Trier, Sentimental Value, and Chloe Zhao, Hamnet. This is going to Ryan Coogler. I don't think there's any doubt that this is where Sinners is going to sweep. And which brings us to Best Picture, which is Begonia, F1. I don't know how that made it there. You know, that's a big, silly Hollywood movie. It deserves to be made and enjoyed in a theater. It doesn't really deserve to be on this list. Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, The Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, Sinners, and Train Dreams. Now, 70 to 80% of these movies deserve to be here. But I don't even think it's going to be a contest. I think this is going to be Sinners' year. I think it's going to sweep these both of these awards. I think it's going to win for Best Picture.
Yeah, it. I mean, honestly, One Battle After Another and doesn't deserve to be on that list. F1, you know, yeah, it's a race car movie, but is it the Best Picture? No. But yeah, this is Sinners. This is where Sinners is going to, like we said, you know, you were saying it earlier in the show, this is where the top ballot, this is where we're going to start really cleaning up the top ballot stuff.
Now, I will say, though, it's a nice, well-rounded category when you look at, like, you've got some Hollywood, big Hollywood movies on here, but you also have The Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, and Train Dreams, which are much smaller films, but they're fantastic, and they show a real vision and a voice in filmmaking, and, like, I'd like to see more of that. Like, if you look at this diversity of filmmaking and Best Picture, it is absent in a lot of these other categories. So, which I find really interesting. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, you could say, but this one has 10, the other ones only get 5. Yeah, I get that. But, you know, there are all different types of films. And, you know, when you see things made outside the big studio system, although nowadays almost everything will be made outside the studio system. It was really nice to see, because these movies, Sentimental Value, especially Sentimental Value and Train Dreams, really felt like that discovering of that indie film at a festival that you know is going to be big, that you're like one of the first ones to see it, that, you know, has like this really great vision and talent behind it. So it was really fun watching those two specifically as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, I mean, this happened over 10 years ago, I think, when they expanded this category to up to 10.
Right.
And the thing we've always said is it's good because you can give, like, you know, Dark Knight got nominated one year, and it's like you can give nominations to films just to show them sort of respect, even though they're definitely long shots. So I've always pretty much been in favor of expanding this category, because you can just get some different. I mean, look, I don't think it's a bad thing to have F1 on this list. I mean, like, let's put a long shot on there. Brad Pitt in a race car. Why not? Is it Best Picture? Yeah. No, but okay, great. You know what I mean? Put it up there.
It's interesting to see like a Best Picture nominee that you haven't seen nominated since Best Sound or.
Yeah. Oh, what are you doing here? Nice. That's right.
It's
good TV ratings, because now, you know, now we're going to get Brad Pitt in the audience. Like having Brad Pitt on the red carpet. Look, I know that he's helps. In his 50s, but still, he still helps. It's still good TV.
Brad Pitt will have a presence, you know, for the next 20 years, no matter where he is or what he's doing.
It's like Jack Nicholson. They always had to have Jack Nicholson there. You know what I mean? Like him and Clooney. They need him and Clooney and Matt Damon somewhere near the Oscars and Tom Hanks.
Like presence and charisma. I'm like, okay, well, it's a staple. But folks, there you have it. That is your 2026 Oscar ballot. Use it as you will, depending on if you're going to be betting or not. I would trust 70 to 75% of our picks for sure.
I say bet the house. We're bet it all on what we said.
But this was fun to do, Graham. I'm glad we got to do this again in literally different continents and, you know, to celebrate the return of the feed and all of the episodes.
Yeah, go back and listen to the past, Kat. Like when I was in Japan with Sanai and Andrea, and they were like, "Oh," she goes, "I like going back listening." So go back and listen to your favorites and put up, go online. You know, we still have the Comedy Film Nerds Twitter feed, and and if you're listening to this on the audio side, we're going to put the video of this on the Comedy Film Nerds YouTube channel, and we'll even clip this out and put little 1 to 2, 3 minute clips of this conversation. And we'll put this out even maybe on our Comedy Film Nerds. Do we still have a Comedy Film Nerds Instagram?
We do. And Daniel actually helped me be able to log into it again. It was, you know, because everything's like locked down and you can't get to it and change passwords and stuff. So, but yes, as of literally maybe 4 days ago, we have access to the CFN Instagram account again. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's really cool. So, you know, we're going to be, and I think, you know, Chris and I have talked, we're going to do, we've been doing maybe one a year. I think we might do two or three of these a year because it's fun. It's fun to talk movies. Yeah. It really is. Especially the state of the world right now. It's nice to just talk movies, man. It's just like,
no stress. Needs a break. Yeah.
Yeah. No Absolutely. Stakes. There's nothing at stake for the show. No. Just
not at all.
There's a movie. I liked it. You didn't. Yep. Who cares? Yep. You know what I mean? It's a shit. Yep.
the biggest stake is a stable Wi-Fi connection. That's it.
Well, as long as there's still Wi-Fi in the world, we can keep doing the show.
But yeah, we want to thank you guys again because, you know, you guys are still a lot of the Comedy Film Nerd fans we're still in contact with. You're still around. Mm-hmm. We still see you on socials. We appreciate the support over the years. I see a lot of them in my Patreon and the Kickstarters when I'm doing comics. And they've always been, you guys have always been a loyal bunch. Yeah. And we appreciate that. You followed us wherever we may go. And it's much appreciated. So thanks again.
No, I've had a handful of Film Nerd fans come over to my YouTube stuff and my other things, and I appreciate it. And you know what, Chris, why I want to keep doing this show every once in a while, I'm living in Bangkok right now. The movie theaters here are amazing, and they're like, it's like $7 to sit in a reclining seat with a blanket and food and all this. Like, it's so
awesome.
It's so affordable.
They give you a blanket?
Oh yeah, the air conditioning is, it's so hot outside, they crank the AC, so some of the theaters, they'll give you a blanket. It's a reclining seat. You can Oh, it's like you can get ones with a couch. There's the VIP version at some of the theaters were like for about $30, but it includes a buffet dinner beforehand. It's so great. I love the movie going experience. So awesome. I'm down with doing this more often.
Oh, let's do it. Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, go to grahamelwood.com for all of my stuff. Chris, where can people get your other things?
Go to whitecatentertainment.com and we have some new comics there, and you could get them signed. You could also, if you don't want to deal with a new website, you can also buy the stuff on Amazon as well. But buy it from me at whitecatentertainment.com and I will sign it for you. Ooh. And send it out.
Oh, I forgot to say, I'm finishing up a GoFundMe. I'm doing a pilot episode for a late night talk show called Hollywood Asia Tonight. We're going to shoot it here in Bangkok. So if you just go to grahamelwood.com, there's a link to the GoFundMe, and any support, we would greatly appreciate it. So go to grahamelwood.com.
And as always, remember, I'm Chris Mancini.
And I'm Graham Elwood.
And remember.
And remember, Han
shot first.
Boy, we only did 600 of these. How could we forget the ending?
We really, we got our timings off. We'll blame it on the delay.
Well, a clumsy Han shot first is better than no Han shot first. So
take what you can get.
All right. Thanks for watching, everybody.